This is the How to Not Suck at Money podcast, show number 6. Welcome back to the How to Not Suck at Money podcast. I'm your host, Devon Jarvis. Welcome back to the show. Glad to have you here with me. I just want to say Happy New Year to everyone. Hopefully you guys had a happy holiday and a great new year. And let's finally put 2020 behind us. Oh my God, what a terrible, terrible year that was for most people. So let's hopefully say goodbye to 2020, and not too many of the 2020 characteristics will carry over into 2021. And today we're going to talk about the things that rich people know/do that poor people don't. And hopefully this will be a great segment to get you guys thinking about what you need to do to be successful with your money in 2021. And this is going to be a two-part episode. I'm going to break this up because it would be a little too long to do in one segment. And I'm going to point out the top 20 things that rich people think/do that poor people don't. Unfortunately, for a lot of you guys, this is probably going to kind of hit a soft spot in the heart. It's probably make you feel some type of way. You're going to be a little upset about it. But if you're upset about it, it means because I'm saying something that's probably true, and that's why it offends you. So hopefully that's not the case, and hopefully you don't get too bothered about the things that I'm saying today. But really, these are the things that I think will separate the way maybe you think to the way that rich people think, because at the end of the day, where are we trying to get to? What are we trying to achieve? So with that said, let's get into number one of the first thing that rich people think and do that poor people don't. And number one would be how you can pay little to no taxes if you start a business. So the average person is a W-2 employee. So what does that mean? And I talked about this in some of the previous episodes before. And that means you go to work, you put in 40 hours a week, you get paid. And when you look at your pay stub, you're going to see that before you even get your paycheck, the government comes in and they say, well, this is what you made. We're going to take a certain percentage of that, and it comes out automatically before it ever even hits your bank account. But if you start a business, that is not necessarily the case. So for many businesses, businesses make money, they spend the money, and then they pay taxes on whatever is left over. And that's where you want to be. You want to be able to spend money, pay your employees, improve your business, spend money on growth. And then when you're done, you'll tell Uncle Sam, you know what? I had a lot of things I needed to do. This is what I have left over. You can tax me on this. Now, if you do this very well, then you can be like Google, Amazon, and all those other companies that they will legitimately invest all the money that they make so they can never claim a profit, and then they never have to pay taxes on it. Unfortunately, that's not the same for the average W-2 employee. You can't tell the government, I'll catch you later on the taxes. The government will say, we're going to get our taxes before you even ever get your hands on that money. So the individual earns money, gets taxed, and then spends whatever is left over. That's not the way we want to do it. So on average, the average American pays roughly about 28% on taxes, where the average corporation pays about 0 to 4% on taxes. So what does that mean? Well, really, it means there's no way to reduce your taxes if you're a W-2 employee. If you can start a business, hire employees, get other people to work for you, then really now you can get into that corporation side. And there's the C-Corp, S-Corps, a lot of different ways you can go about it, which is not a scope that I want to get into in this episode, but you can actually not pay any taxes until you have some money that's left over. And really and truly, if you had the choice of investing money to make your company grow versus paying taxes up front, what would you do? Well, I would invest my money to make my company grow. I definitely don't want to pay taxes if I don't need to. All right. Number two is making money is about solving a problem in the marketplace. What does that mean? Well, let's think about this for a second. All right. Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world. He did not just say, I'm going to become the richest man in the world because I'm going to work for someone. No, he solved a problem in the marketplace. What was that problem? Well, the problem was that we needed to be able to buy stuff online. And that's where the marketplace was trending to. It was trending away from going into stores and spending money waiting in line for stuff. And he created multiple systems that made it so easy to just click a button and buy something online. And it was so painless, so easy. And guess what? That was freaking brilliant. A lot of people love it. It was so easy. Amazon can recommend things based on what you bought before, and they can figure out, hey, these are the things you bought. Maybe this is what you want next. They're very, very good at that. He figured that problem out. So that's why he's very, very successful at it. So we can ask ourselves the question, should Jeff Bezos' net worth have not, should it have not raised $70 billion this year? Well, there's one argument against the fact that his net worth being raised $70 billion this year is a little extreme. But here's my counter to that argument. Jeff Bezos made a company that has a lot of things that we all subscribe to, right? Whether it's Amazon Prime for music, videos, Alexa, just general shopping overall. And there's a lot of people out there that are upset saying, how can you make $70 billion when so many Americans are out of work? Well, here's my question to you. Did you buy anything on Amazon this year? Well, statistically, most people did. Actually, statistically, most people bought more things on Amazon than they ever have in the past. So if you are going to spend the majority of your shopping, because we weren't able to go out to stores and buy things, but you're going to do it on Amazon, how could Jeff Bezos not get rich? I mean, it just doesn't make sense, right? Think about it. He is providing a service that we all enjoy, because if we did not enjoy it, we would not spend money on it. So this is one of those situations where you are directly voting for what you like based on what you spend money on. So we can't get mad at Jeff Bezos when we spent more money than we ever spent on Amazon this year. And obviously because of COVID, no one was going out, no one was buying stuff. So we went online and we bought it instead of going to the stores, right? So why do I applaud him? Because he was able to do something that many other people were not able to do. He figured out sales. What products do people want? He figured out how to acquire those products. He figured out a process in order for you to get those products. So when you get online and you click and you put things in your cart, he systemized all those things in order to make it very seamless, so that you wouldn't even notice, you know, where the products were coming from, and it was very transparent to you. He also figured out suppliers. Where are these different products going to come from? He worked out where in the world he can get these products from to bring it directly to our doors. He also figured out distribution, where these products are going to be held. Where are they going to come into the country from? Where are they going to be held? And then finally, you know, leave the distribution center to ultimately make it to your front door. He also figured out how many employees am I going to need? And this is, you know, really based on the demand. If the demand for products from Amazon was 10,000, then he needs way less employees. If people are ordering, you know, at an unbelievable pace, then he needs to figure out how many employees do I need in order to keep up this demand. So the main reason that these CEOs, and I'm just using Jeff Bezos as an example here, we can insert different CEO and it's really the same thing, is they're able to figure out how to solve these processes, which the average person does not figure that out. And that's why the average person is not rich. So don't get mad at someone like a Jeff Bezos, because they figured out how to solve a process, how to give you exactly what you need, how to convince you every time you go on to Amazon and you see something, you're like, you know, oh man, yeah, that would be nice if I could get these, you know, tools to go with my grill. That would be awesome. They convince you to buy something that you really don't need, but the bottom line is you buy it. They can't make you buy it, but they convince you to buy it, and then you buy it because he makes it very convenient for you to get what you need, figure out how to get it there, figure out really how to do that in a very short period of time so you don't have to wait for very long. Because if there's one thing we all do as Americans is we really hate to wait, and we, you know, really don't like this delayed gratification. So when we want something, we want it now. He figured out how to solve that problem, and he figured out how to solve the processes along that way. So that is one thing that rich people do that poor people don't, is figure out what can I bring to the marketplace and how can I solve the process in order to make it get to as many people as possible. Number three on this list will be make money while you sleep or you'll never be rich. Now, I really can't stress how big of a deal this is. This is like me dropping some like real knowledge on you guys. If you don't know how to make money while you sleep, you'll never be rich. So the average person, W-2 employee, is going to trade time for money, which means you're going to clock in and you're going to clock out. Yeah, maybe you're not going to use the legitimate like clocking machines, you know, like from the Fred Flintstone days where you're going to take a time card and go stamp in, stamp out. However, you're expected to spend a certain amount of hours at work, and you know, people are going to be looking for you. If you're not there, then that's going to be a problem. So if you need to show up to work from, you know, 8 to 5 o'clock, people will expect you to be there from 8 to 5 o'clock, including your boss. However, what happens when you're not at work? You need to be able to find a way how to make money when you're sleeping. If you only trade your time for money, well, think about it this way. There's only 24 hours in a day. Let's say you were Superman, you never slept, you never ate, and you were just, you know, spot on all day being productive. That gives you 24 hours a day. Even if you made $1 million a year doing that, well, you really cannot work more than 24 hours in a day, right? So how can you make money when you are not working / trading your time for money? Because there are a limited number of hours in the day, and your ability to generate income should not be tied to you. What you need to do is build a system, build a machine that makes you money when you are not there. So that's why a lot of people write books. A lot of folks go out, they write books or they create courses, because now you're looking at books can be sold while you're sleeping. You don't have to be there to sell a book. Yeah, they may go out, do some initial book tours, talk about their books, you know, and then if their book becomes a bestseller and it goes on the New York Times bestseller list, then everyone's able to access that. They'll see, hey, in finance, you know what, Devon had a bestseller book on finance. That's going to sell whether or not I'm there promoting that book. So you need to come up with a way to make a system, create a product, create systems to where you can make money while you are sleeping. Because if you only rely on your job, if you only rely on clocking in and clocking out, you will never be rich. And if that is your goal, and I assume that everyone that's listening to this show is your goal is to be rich. So you cannot just focus on working in order to make you rich. And number four, instead of cutting down on costs, focus on increasing your income. So you can really only cut down your costs so much. So, you know, if you live wherever you live in whatever city, it really doesn't matter. If the average rent for that city is $1,500 and, well, maybe you want to live in a less than average place, maybe a really, really crappy place. Maybe you can go down to, let's say, $1,000. Either way, you can only cut costs so much, right? Because eventually you got to have to pay for a place to live. You got to pay for food. You got to pay for your insurance, your car payment, whatever the case may be, whatever you have as far as the things and the bills that you need to keep you alive. But your earning potential is unlimited. Focus on how you can earn more money. And that goes back into what I was talking about before in step number three. How am I going to make money while I'm sleeping? Focus on earning more money. And that way you don't have to cut down your costs. So full disclosure, I hate cutting down costs. I don't want to, you know, scrimp and not spend as much money as I want on the things that I enjoy. So I don't focus on how to cut that back. What I focus on is how can I make more money to where the things that I want are so insignificant that it's such a small part of my spending. That's the way you need to go. Don't worry about cutting back on costs. Focus on the unlimited possibilities that you have in order to make more money. Step number five, the rich would rather take passive income over earned income. Why is that? Well, because earned income means that I have to clock in, kind of like what we were talking about before. I have to show up to work. I have to clock in. I have to clock out. You know, my boss needs to know I'm there. I need to put in X amount of work in order for them to feel satisfied. However, passive income is completely independent of the amount of hours you put in. Maybe not initially. If you put in more hours initially, then you could set up those systems to make sure that your passive income will be great over time. However, I'll give you an example. Let's say that I wanted to buy a treadmill, and let's say the treadmill costs $1,000. All right. And I really want this treadmill, and I'm like, oh man, I can use the money that I made from work this month and I could buy that treadmill. Well, if I use the money I made this month, let's say I make $4,000 and then I go out and buy this treadmill, it means, and I spend $1,000 on this treadmill, it means I only have $3,000 left. Bam. So that treadmill took up really, you know, not most, but it took up a certain percentage of my income for that month. So it will take up 25% of my income for that month. However, let's say I have a passive income stream that makes me $1,000 a month as well. So treadmill costs $1,000. My passive income stream costs me or brings me in $1,000 a month. All right, so still have the same job. Nothing changed there. However, passive income does not really require me to do anything because I've taken my money, I've invested it, and this is just going to be, you know, passive income that's coming in. So will I have to do some sort of work? Absolutely. However, is it going to be the same amount of work as me, you know, going in to work, clocking and clocking out? Absolutely not. So what if I made $1,000 a month in passive income? And for argument's sake, let's say we invested this in real estate. All right. So now when I want that treadmill, guess what's going to happen? Treadmill costs $1,000. I have $1,000 a month passive income coming in. I can buy that treadmill every single month for the rest of my life. Well, what does that mean? Well, because the passive income does not affect my earned income in the sense that I don't have to go into work, clock in, clock out in order to get that passive income. I've already invested it and I've created systems to where I'm going to get this $1,000 a month for the rest of my life. So I can buy a $1,000 treadmill for the rest of my life. And then now you're going to be like, all right, DJ, hey, yeah, but there's inflation and there's that, you know, I get it. So I'm obviously, if the example I used was real estate, well, we're going to raise the rents in real estate to adjust for inflation. And we know that the price of the treadmill is going to raise based on inflation. So let's say the treadmill price raise, you know, 2% per year. Well, I could raise my real estate rent 2% per year. And that covers the price of the treadmill. So why do I love passive income? And why does the rich love passive income? Well, because it has no direct ties to you, which means if I died today, that $1,000 will continue to come in. Because when my renters pay their rent, they don't know whether I'm alive, whether I'm in California, New York, New Mexico, or Idaho. It doesn't matter. The rent's going to keep coming in every month on time. Step number six in this equation is over 40% of your income should go to investing. And really and truly, you know, it may sound like a lot. I've gotten some reports from a lot of you guys that it sounds like a lot to put 40% of your money towards investing. But really, you have to ask yourself, what kind of life do I want to live? The math is really simple on this. Do I want to work for 50 years and only save 10% and then hopefully make it through retirement from 65 to 90? Or do I want to put more money away and have a better opportunity to be able to live the life I want to live and retire with dignity and not have to worry about running out of money before I'm 90 years old and or retiring on my children to be able to take care of me? So you really have to figure out what it is that you want. But, you know, highly recommend over 40% of your income needs to go towards investing for the future. Last year, my wife and I, we saved about 48% of our income towards retirement. And obviously, that's going to open up a lot of opportunities to where we're not reliant on Social Security or the government or anything like that in order to help keep us afloat. So take control of your finances. Take control of your future. Don't live today to the point where you're screwing yourself out of a future life that is really what you want. So don't worry about, you know, spending too much money, or I wouldn't say spending too much money, but investing too much money in your future, because really, I don't really think you can invest too much money in your future. Now, obviously, you want to be able to live. You want to be able to have a good time, because what happens if you walk outside and you get hit by a bus, right? Like, that's the argument I get all the time. Okay, and that's fine. If you got hit by a bus, then you were going to get hit by a bus. So it really doesn't matter how much money you saved. That wasn't going to change the fact that you were going to get hit by a bus. But what if you don't? What if you don't get hit by a bus? And then what if you live to 80, 90 years old, but you were in the mindset of, well, I'm probably not going to live that long. So, and then what if you do? Did you save enough money to be able to live the life you want to live? Probably not. So focus not just on the short-sightedness, because rich people don't focus on the short side. They focus on the long term, and they have short-term and long-term investments. But the thing is, you need to have investments. Otherwise, you will not be able to live the life that you want to live. And number seven, not to save money in the bank, and understanding that every time you put money under the mattress, or you just put money in a bank account, that you're losing money. Inflation is a thing. If you don't know what inflation is, inflation means that every year after today, every year in the future, the dollar that you save today will be worth less than what it is right now. So on average, the United States experienced an inflation rate of roughly about 2.5 to 3%. So what does that mean? If you have money just buried under your mattress, and you have $100 buried under your mattress, then 1 year from now, it will be worth about 2.5% less than that $100. So we don't want to put our money in a bank account. And the rich understands this. They don't just hide money under the mattress. They invest their money, because it makes no sense to make all that money, work that hard for it, and then lose it to inflation. So that really makes no sense. So to give you some numbers to really drive this home, and we'll say you had $1 million in 2020. Well, if you had $1 million in 2020, then that would have been worth $250,000 30 years ago. So that goes to show you how inflation actually works. So keeping your money in cash really costs you money, because it costs you the opportunity of keeping your money invested and having it grow with inflation. So that's why we don't want to put our money on the mattress, or just keeping it in a bank account that's really not earning any type of interest. So the rich put their money in things that are going to really make up for the inflation. So they put it in stocks, bonds, depending on the type of bonds, real estate, art, and gold. And those things should help beat the inflation, so that they don't end up losing the value of the money when they invest. And that's going to do it for this show. Stay tuned for part two of the things that rich people do that poor people don't. If you like this content, go ahead and leave me a rating and leave me a comment. If there's any topic you want me to address in an upcoming episode, go ahead and leave that in the comments below, and I will get to it as soon as I can. And with that said, I'll see you in the next episode.